T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Angela Hoekelees won a couple of gold medals playing in 2 Women's World Cups. And during her 7-year career representing the United States, she played in 109 matches, led the U.S. in the 2000 Summer Olympics with 4 goals. Angela, that is impressive. Welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us to talk a little United States women's soccer. I hate to tell you, though, that Alex Morgan beat your 4 goals in one match today, right?
You know what? I'll accept that. That's fine by me.
That's fine by you?
Yeah.
What a performance today. First of all, 13-0. I mean, was it possible that the U.S. could have maybe taken it a little easier, or did they ruffle some feathers by winning by this kind of a margin?
All right, I'm just going to give it to you straight here. I know this is a hot topic right now. I have friends and college teammates asking me these same questions. And in my opinion, it's what they're there to do. You know, it's not about making Thailand look bad. It's really about the U.S. showing up, doing the work. They trained extremely hard over the past 4 years to get to this point. And these are professional athletes competing in the world's largest tournament and stage and soccer's greatest tournament. So they're trying to show up, execute in their game plan. You know, it might make us as viewers a little bit uncomfortable watching Thailand getting pummeled like that. But when it comes down to goal differential, you don't know what Sweden's going to be doing later on in the tournament against Thailand as well. You know, these women are not responsible for trying to manage the emotions of another team. They're there to do their job, and they're there to compete.
Well said, Angela. Well said. I mean, I just think it was a question that needed to be asked. It was the first thing that kind of popped into my head when I watched the match today. I mean, obviously, I want the U.S. to win and dominate, and they did. So tell us a little bit about this team and how much what they did today will affect them going forward. Is it going to give them any more confidence going forward? Or, I mean, did they kind of know that this game was basically a mismatch coming in?
I would say yes to both. Definitely gives them confidence. I think just the style and the way in which they played, it was very fluid. They were executing quite clinically. And, you know, when you look at the other teams in this tournament, this is the most competitive Women's World Cup we've ever seen in the history of women's soccer. And France started off the tournament with a phenomenal showing. So it also makes a little bit of a statement to the other teams with the U.S. showing up the way that they did. But going into this match, that was the expectation. I think my prediction was 8 goals. I had no idea they would have gotten a 13, but at the same time, it's not surprising because they are that good.
Angela Hoekelees is with FS1 and calling the Women's World Cup. She and Glenn Davis will be calling Nigeria, South Korea tomorrow at 6 a.m. Get up and enjoy the match on FS1. USA, Team USA going forward with a good start to this World Cup in France. What are some of the teams that are going to give them the most problem, or teams that they are looking at, you know, realistically out there that could try and take their championship away from them?
What I love about this tournament is that because it's so competitive, any one team can show up and make a difference and potentially upset their other team. And one of the games that Glenn and I called was just that, with Australia versus Italy. The expectation was that Australia would come away with the 3 points, and Italy gets a second goal, winning 2-1 in the last remaining minutes of the game. And that's what the United States has to just be aware of. I think looking in their own group, Sweden is a rivalry that they've had for a few years now. And so an excellent team that even just getting out of the group stage, I don't think they'll have a problem. The United States will have a problem getting out of the group stage, but it's just going to be a nice competitive match. You look at France, I think when you look at the brackets, how things are paired up with the different groups, the United States could potentially meet France earlier on in this tournament. So that is going to be potentially, it could be a World Cup final, but you know, they might be meeting in the quarterfinals depending on how the groups play out. So, right. So many amazing teams and competitive teams in this World Cup.
Angela, talk a little bit about what the Women's World Cup means to young ladies in the United States. I think a lot of people listening to this interview, a lot of people listening to us talk about this today, go, hey, what's the big deal about the Women's World Cup? I try to explain to people, I used to cover the, do you remember the Women's USA, the WUSA, that it was the very first professional league after they won the World Cup at the Rose Bowl, and Brandi Chastain scored the winning goal and the whole thing way back when.
Yep.
And I had traveled with one of the teams from San Diego in that league, and I was just blown away at the impact that these athletes had on so many young ladies all across the country. And that's why I think the Women's World Cup is an important event, and it's important that we talk about it, because there's a lot of people listening whose kids are watching these players, and they are looking up to them, and they will go on and become athletes themselves.
Yeah, and not to date myself, but I just came out of college at that time when the WSA WUSA started, and that was my first professional experience. So I played in that league, remember it finally. And you know, I think that's part of it, though. I think that's part of the story. You know, this team is such a special, incredible team, both currently and also historically. And, you know, the players have really made an effort, the current players, to re-engage all of the previous and past players. And it's a very, it's the most special sorority I think you could ever be a part of. And I think what the culture of this team does is share a part of themselves with the fans and with the community. I think that's the power of this group and how it affects young girls and young boys and grown men and grown women. I don't think it's one single group of people. I think that's the power and the spirit of the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team. And to be able to see yourself in one of those players based off of a performance or even what they're standing for and representing and how they conduct themselves, not just on the field, but off the field, I think more importantly, that's really the power and the specialness and unique qualities that this team exudes.
Next match for the U.S. is Chile on June the 16th, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
It's gonna be a good game.
Yeah, and then Sweden after that, and then they're through the group stage, and then it's on to the knockout round after that. Angela, great stuff. Enjoyed chatting with you. What team did you play for in the WUSA, if I may ask?
I was with the Boston Breakers. The
Boston Breakers.
I
remember the Boston Breakers. Yeah. I think I went to Boston and did that match. What's that?
I was actually traded to San Diego right before before the league folded. So I never actually played for San Diego. But I would have been there.
I had already folded by then, personally. But I was there the first year when it first started. Hey, Angela, thanks so much for your time. Enjoyed the conversation. Very interesting stuff. Have fun calling the rest of this tournament.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Gwen and Chris back at you. Rolling through a Tuesday. Padres getting set to take on the Giants tonight. Up in San Francisco, pregame show, 5:45, first pitch, 6:45. We have a lot to get done before that, Tony Gwynn Jr. and myself.
Yes, we do.
And one of those things we have to get done is the Big Five.
Sometimes there's just not enough time in the day to talk all the sports we want.
I feel reborn. I'm like a phoenix.
Settle in and saddle up. The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
Did you add some Raptors to that?
No.
sound mix? It sounded like a real scrappy battle going on there at the end of that.
No, this is the only Raptor we have. The Raptors didn't look that mean last night, let me tell you.
All right.
All right, let's get into it.
Number five.
These new beds get me every time, but I love them. Another day, another Pittsburgh Pirates-related benches clearing incident. This time, it is with the Braves third baseman Josh Donaldson and San Diego's own Pirates starting pitcher Joe Musgrove. Now, it didn't seem like much because it only grazed the jersey, but it was up and in, and Josh Donaldson didn't like it. He turned to Musgrove and said, quote, "What are you looking at?" And then he said some expletives, too. Musgrove then started walking towards him, and the benches started clearing. Then the umpires ejected both Donaldson and Musgrove in the first inning. The ejections changed the course of Monday's game and potentially the series, because in the second inning, Musgrove's replacement, Alex McRae, surrendered a grand slam to Ronald Acuna Jr., and the Pirates were forced to wear out their rubber arms in their bullpen to get through the contest, tasking three pitchers with the final 8 1/3 innings. So, Tony, is baseball becoming too sensitive?
I don't know if baseball is becoming too sensitive, but Brian Gorman got it wrong.
Is that the home plate umpire?
That's the home plate umpire. If anything, the only person who should have been ejected is Josh Donaldson. He's the one who escalated the whole situation.
He did.
Musgrove was just coming to get another ball, is why he was even looking in that direction, asking for a ball. Josh Donaldson, in his overreaction, assumed he would. Because he was. When he got grazed, he immediately looked at Musgrove. Musgrove wasn't looking at him at that point, so he kind of turned away. But now he sees him out of his corner of his eye. Musgrove's asking for the ball. He assumes he's looking at him again. And who cares if he's looking at you? Just go to first base. Again, if you're not going to do nothing, you're not going to charge, go to base. Because this benches clearing incident wasn't even any pushing really involved in this. It was just a bunch of dudes standing on the field. So Josh Donaldson should have been the one ejected, not Musgrove.
Chris, do you think baseball is becoming too sensitive?
No, but I know Josh Donaldson's way too sensitive.
Way too sensitive.
Way too sensitive. This was an inside pitch that barely grazed his jersey. Are you kidding me? And like Tony said, go down to first base. Let's play ball. This was ridiculous. And the home plate umpire got it completely flat out wrong. And in the process, as you pointed out, has really hurt the Pirates' chances here for the next week or so, because their pitching staff is a mess.
They were forced into a bullpen game when they didn't know they needed one.
Right, and teams are now taking starting pitchers out earlier and earlier than ever, so they need their bullpen guys fresh. Baseball can't make mistakes like this, and I've always felt that guys that escalate these kinds of things are the ones that should be kicked out.
Yeah.
And Musgrove didn't escalate a thing. And he didn't start anything either. Josh Donaldson, I do not understand what he was so upset about. And he is the one that is too wimpy here.
Too wimpy.
Yes.
All right.
Not that it would be easy for me to take any kind of 90-mile-an-hour pitch off my jersey. But I think I would have been able to make it to first base on that one.
What are you doing? Like, what are you doing, bro? We're almost to the NFL season, and most training camps are just 6 weeks away. Can you guys believe that? Football is almost back. And with this season comes new rules. The owners approve the review of pass interference calls or non-calls, but as it turns out, some coaches don't want that responsibility. During conference calls last week, according to multiple sources, some of them pushed back, in part because of the impact on timeout and challenge strategy. This response mirrors the proposal most coaches advocated in March to convert the replay official into a quote-unquote sky judge who would alert the on-field referee whenever an egregious mistake was made. Chris, do you think review should be initiated by the coaches or by an official?
By an official, and that would be, I mean, the AAF left us one legacy, and that was how to do replay correct.
That's true.
I mean, have a guy that's watching the game. If there's an egregious mistake, buzz down to the field and say, hey, we need a couple seconds to look at that. Whoa, that was pass interference. Let's move on with the game. Oh, that reception was inbounds or it was out of bounds. I don't think it should be up to the coaches. I don't think it should be up to the players. I don't think it should be up to the broadcasters. You have officials. They're calling the game. Have another official there to help them who's watching eye in the sky. And get this stuff taken care of and get it right. And I'm telling you, this whole notion now of being able to check whether it's pass interference or not, I don't know about you, Tony, but if I'm a coach, I'm throwing the flag every time I throw a ball 60 yards downfield, just in case they rule that somebody tripped up my receiver by accident. I'll get 60 yards out of it. It's worth the chance every single time to see if you can't get that yardage based on replay. So I think football is going to have some major issues on its hands, as it always does with new rules on replay.
I wish they would have like a fans replay. You know, everybody hits a button in a bar or something.
Why do we all know what the call is sitting there, you know, right,
well, watching
totally
the game?
We totally get it, and then they blow it on the field.
Every single time. Tony, what do you think? Do you think that review should be initiated by the coaches or by an official?
Should be by the official. Somebody up top, as Chris said, the lasting legacy of the AAF is just that, the eye in the sky. That's the only other way to, that other tweak you could add to it. Because I think you're right. The closer we get to the NFL season, the more I think about that call in New Orleans, the more I think this is going to get really messy. And
really messy.
I think the NFL has no idea how messy this can really get. Or maybe they do, and they just are willing to roll the dice on it.
Anytime a receiver falls down more than 40 yards downfield and there's a defensive back within 5 yards of him, throw the flag out there. You might get a call out of it and gain that yardage.
And as fans, we're already conditioned to go to the extreme, generally, as noted from last night's game in Toronto, with the fans cheering KD going off. We always are going to react to the extreme and then maybe bring it back, but I just, this is going to get messy. I just really feel that way.
The only thing the AAF should have done, taking it from the NFL, is their accounting department.
Touche.
Should have figured that one out.
They didn't have that.
Number three.
If you're looking to be the world's richest athlete, you don't want to play in the good old US of A, because Forbes put out a list of the world's top paid athletes, and players in the American sports leagues were not even in the top five. Barcelona's Lionel Messi earned $127 million this past year in a combination of salary and endorsements, and that is $18 million more than second place Cristiano Ronaldo, who pocketed a total of $109 million. The first American on the list, Russell Wilson, he was at number six with $89.5 million. Then you had Aaron Rodgers, LeBron James, Stephen Curry, and KD to round out the top 10. Because American sports are watched all over the world, and it's not quite the same with Americans watching world sports, Chris, should American sports leagues athletes be paid more?
I think they are. I mean, I think you're just bringing up a couple of isolated examples who happen to be on top here in Messi and Ronaldo.
And then you got like Federer.
Well, look, tennis players play all over the world. I mean, baseball players don't play all over the world. So you can get endorsements from all over the world. You can get worldwide endorsements. I don't think too many Major League Baseball players can get a worldwide endorsement where they're endorsing a product in Africa. But in Africa, they know who Roger Federer is. So
it's true.
I think the best place to play is in the United States of America, and I think that the athletes in this country make more money than any athletes anywhere. But there are a few little isolated guys that are at the tip top. That's just because they have world recognition that, you know, say an NFL player is just not going to have.
Yeah. I mean, I am an overreactor. I saw this and I was offended for American athletes. Tony?
I think American athletes are doing okay.
Should American athletes be paid more?
No. I think they're paid enough. What Chris said, I mean, first of all, when you're dealing with soccer in particular, when you're talking Messi and Ronaldo, their salaries include all of those worldwide endorsements. Whereas in America, we don't necessarily we don't count those on their contracts. Now, we can go out and add it, but a lot of times we don't know all the endorsements they're getting. You know, sometimes it's from a smaller company that, you know, they can't necessarily track or whatever the case may be. But I think at the end of the day, athletes in America are paid plenty fine. And it makes sense. They're not advertising. They're not doing things outside of the United States. Unlike Federer, Messi, Ronaldo, they're worldwide. And that's because of their sport. They play worldwide.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Number two.
We're smart sometimes.
Yeah, today you guys are. Ha! Newly signed Atlanta Braves.
I shouldn't have said that because we'll probably sound like dummies on this one.
Newly signed Atlanta Braves pitcher Dallas Keuchel pitched 7 scoreless innings in a minor league start with Class A Rome on Monday, striking out 9 Charleston batters. He allowed 1 hit, walked 1 batter, and threw 77 pitches, 55 of those for strikes. He was supposed to start last Saturday for AAA Gwinnett against Durham, but the game was called off due to weather. Keuchel signed a 1-year deal last week with the Braves that pays him $13 million this year. So, Tony, what is a good number of wins for Keuchel to have to call the contract a success?
In the entire time... Wait, he signed a 1-year deal, right?
Well, just for... Sorry, let me rephrase that.
Over
for
the rest of
the
season,
yeah. How would you... What would be a successful performance for him to call the contract good?
Well, when's he... Well, it depends on when he comes up. I mean, if it's soon, which
Let's
I
Let's just say soon.
I don't know. This is... 8 wins? 7 wins? As long as he can anchor that rotation, his job is done. Because that's why they brought him on. They brought him on for the year to anchor this rotation, to be the ace. He does ace-like things. His contract is worth it.
All right. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't have a number of wins that he needs to get because starting pitchers and wins doesn't go hand in hand anymore. Mm. I mean, some of the better pitchers don't get as many wins as guys that aren't as good at pitchers. Here's how the contract will be good or not. If you wake up on the first week of October and turn on your television and the Atlanta Braves are getting ready for a postseason game and Dallas Keuchel is on the mound, then that contract was worth it. And if the Atlanta Braves are home watching with you, then that contract didn't work out. It's as simple as that. He's got to get them to the postseason.
Man, you guys are
really
good
I sounded
today.
Smart again.
You guys are really good
so
today.
So did Tony.
Number one.
Sports are great, and Tony kind of touched on this a few minutes ago, but one thing that isn't great about sports is when fans make the headlines. And last night's NBA Finals game brought up fan etiquette once again, and this time it's not for a fan going after a player on the court, but fans cheering for KD's injury as he sat on the court after reportedly tearing his Achilles. The Warriors were not happy about it. Here is Steph Curry after the game talking about Toronto fans.
Very confused around that reaction. It's not my experience with, you know, the people of this city. And I commend, obviously, Danny Green and Kyle Lowry especially. I think they were the ones that were kind of signaling to the crowd, like, let's check ourselves a little bit and understand that this is about an individual and a human being and not, oh, shoot, he's out, he's hurt, we won the championship. Like, that was probably their initial thought. And you hate to see... To see that when a guy's going, you know, through pain like that. So, again, that's not my experience with this city, and I just hope that ugliness doesn't show itself again as we go forward in this series.
So, Chris, do you think the fans were out of line, or is this just fans being fans?
I got to be honest with you. It was hard for me to tell because we were watching it as it happened here in the studio,
that's
and we
true,
did not
yeah.
have the sound up, so I didn't really get to hear the full reaction as it happened. I did see that Klay Thompson was upset at a couple of fans who were screaming right there at courtside, told them to take a hike, and I think he had every right to do that. But I can understand fans in the heat of the moment here. This is the NBA championships on the line, and one of the best players in the world just got injured. There's part of you that just says, hey, wait a second. We have a much better chance of winning the NBA championship tonight as a result of this. And then you have to think it through and understand that this is a person. And I think that from what I heard, the Toronto fans really did cheer once they got their bearings. I think for the beginning of it, they were happy because they thought this is going to help them win. Then they realized, man, this really was an injury, a bad deal. And from what I understand, they cheered. So I'm not anti-Toronto fans on this one as much. I think they reacted the way a lot of us would have reacted. You react with your heart first and then your head.
Tony, do you think the fans are out of line, or is this just fans being fans?
I have a different perspective, and maybe it's because I played.
Well, no, that is.
oh, I'm sure.
You
the
got
moment,
yelled at.
The moment somebody goes down, and this is even if I'm if it's the Lakers involved and it happens to somebody on the other team, the moment somebody gets hurt, even though inside I know that might help my team, I'm certainly not going to cheer out loud. Not out loud, especially when I know the circumstances of this particular player. Okay, he's missed the entire series due to a calf. And I know in this world, you have a lot of information at your disposal. So it's not as though people can claim ignorance to not knowing, okay, this could be connected. I mean, he went down and immediately grabbed his Achilles. I mean, we've seen this now too many times. I also understand that for those who don't have my perspective and didn't have my experiences, it's very easy to go down the road that Chris just mentioned, where you immediately are like, yes, this is going to help our team. And then you think about it and you're like, wow, I'm a terrible person. I shouldn't be saying this out loud.
See, and I do that all the time in my reactions.
And that's
things,
exactly so. What happened in Toronto. Chris is right. They did cheer KD. They started actually chanting KD, KD, KD after they got their bearings. But I would just have liked to see them handle that better.
I think it was more of how KD reacted on the court. You knew something serious was up. It wasn't like he went to the bench and limped.
But we knew something serious was up. There's no question. The camera was right on him. But there was 19, 20,000 people in that arena.
It was loud.
Many of them
who
probably couldn't even see the court, for heaven's sakes. So all they might be looking at something else and then notice Kevin Durant's lying on the court.
Okay, I'll give you...
I'm giving a few people a pass didn't see it happen as clearly as we all saw it.
I'll give you the top bowl.
Okay.
They can't... Maybe they couldn't see.
No, but you're right. There were guys right on the court side screaming.
There was too many people cheering for it that couldn't use the excuse of, well, I couldn't see. I couldn't tell what was going on.
I was just following the crowd.
Right, right. But Chris is right. That place was extremely loud, and there are probably a large section of folks that didn't even realize he was on the ground at first, and maybe have just been cheering because everybody else was cheering. But once you realized it, and to Toronto's credit, once they realized what was going on, they changed their tune. But you know, as if I'm KD, I'm hurt. Like, really, you guys are cheering that?
I cannot give Toronto fans an A+ for their reaction here,
right.
But. I
won't
least
give them an
them
F or a D. I'll give them a C+.
Right. I'm going to put them in the middle somewhere because they did come around eventually.
Okay. Good stuff. This might be... Could we say this is the smartest Big Five ever?
I don't know. Could we?
I think so.
You just did.
That's all for I the claimed Big it. Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Right now, though, joining us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline, happy to have with us Matt Steinmetz, Radio.com NBA Insider, host of Radio.com's Big Time Basketball Podcast. Matt, I thought last night was just a big time NBA game. I mean, one of the greats of all time. I think they're going to be playing this one over and over for a long, long time. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. I think that last night's game may have an impact on the entire NBA landscape, to tell you the truth. Not just because of the Warriors' win. I mean, that's actually the smaller part of it, but the Kevin Durant injury. Here's a guy who hasn't played since Game 5 of the Western Conference semifinals, and they're in Game 5 of the NBA playoffs, and he hasn't played, and people are wondering, can he? And they're questioning whether he can or can't. And he goes out and he plays, and you know what? He suffers an injury that's probably going to cost him all of next year. So there's kind of intrigue at every level, including, oh, and the Warriors forced a game 6. If that's important in the grand scheme of things. So, yeah, I think right now we're in a fascinating place with the NBA Finals.
All right, let's talk a little bit about, I mean, because there's a lot of camps going back and forth on Kevin Durant and trying to place blame on this. Was it the Warriors training staff? Was it the Warriors? Was it just Kevin Durant's insistence that he play? Everybody's trying to figure out who did what. To me, I give the guy a lot of credit. He stuck his neck out there for his team, and it didn't pay off. I mean, he got hurt. But what does happen from here with everybody who was planning on making a huge offer to Kevin Durant in the offseason? Because that's what you're really talking about, how the whole NBA landscape has changed, right?
Not necessarily. If you're the New York Knicks right now, are you calling Rich Kleiman and saying, you know what, it looks like your client's going to be gone for the entirety of next year, so we're not actually going to give you a four-year contract for as much as we can give you? I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Knicks would still do that, don't you?
The Knicks? Well, I don't know. Yeah. Whatever the Knicks have to do to mess it up is, I think, what the Knicks would do. I don't have a lot of faith in the Knicks.
I'm just saying that I
but I know what you mean.
Just about every NBA team would sign Kevin Durant for the next 4 years,
sure,
and give up that first year. I just think they would.
Right.
So that's still on the table for him if he wants to go to another team. So he's also got an opt-in out here. So if he wants, in theory, he can just opt back into his Warrior contract for another 1 year, which he's been doing since he got here, and he can rehab essentially on the Warriors' dime and then become a free agent at the end of next year when he either doesn't play or joins the team very late in the season. Or the Warriors can say, hey, look, we get it. You got hurt in the NBA Finals trying to help us out. Here's your five-year max. This is us proving to you that we believe in you. And, yeah, you're not going to be here next year. We don't care. This is how much we want you to stay. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how it plays out.
I like that last idea a lot. I just don't know that it's going to happen because teams never seem to do the exact right thing. Matt Steinman's Radio.com.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very hard to duplicate the Warriors situation because if Kevin Durant leaves, you're still sitting with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. But I do think I think every single NBA team right now would take Kevin Durant for 5 years, knowing full well the first year will be a zero. What do you think? I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing that at you.
Yeah, I think at least two-thirds of them would. Maybe there might be a couple of teams who are happy with the direction they're going and wouldn't want to bring a situation like that and put the – I mean, the expense is going to be quite exorbitant, obviously.
Oh, but, no doubt about it.
But
no
I agree it. With you. Kevin Durant's one of the best, if not the best player in the league. Of course, he's 30 years old, so if you give him a five-year max deal or four, whatever it is, he's 34, 35, and you're probably not going to be getting quite as much from him at that point. So teams have to ask themselves about all that also.
Oh, no doubt.
So that's why it's fascinating, right, as you said.
It's incredibly fascinating because for all we know, the Warriors right now might be thinking, you know what, we can't pay him the supermax for 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, the Warriors are the one team that could actually be saying, you know, we're going into a new arena. Yeah, it's funny because people say, oh, the Warriors are going into a new arena so they can do whatever they want. And sometimes I think, well, they're going into a new arena, so now they got to be a little bit considerate of the bottom line. It's incredible NBA news.
Yeah, it is. No question. Matt Steinman's Radio.com, NBA Insider. Real quick, Matt, I got a couple minutes left.
Sure.
Just on the game itself, I think that people are making a mistake. They're trying to blame Nick Nurse for calling a weird timeout. They're trying to blame Kawhi Leonard for passing the ball out of a double team. I wish people could just look at this and give the world champions a little credit for making a great comeback and pulling out a great game. That's kind of how I look at the way this one finished up, and a great play by Draymond Green to get out on Kyle Lowry. Just, I mean, world champs doing what they have to do to survive. That's how I looked at it.
I'm with you 110%. I really am. And okay, the Nick Nurse timeout, you can criticize that, and rightfully so. But I guarantee you what Nick Nurse was doing was he was saying, you know what, I'm calling a timeout here. We're up 6, 3 minutes to go. I just want to remind these guys, hey, look, we play 3 minutes of good basketball, and we have just dethroned the champions. And, okay, so we can determine whether that's good or bad or not. But, I mean, when he sent him out on the floor, Kawhi Leonard didn't miss his next shot because of that timeout. So I'm completely with you. I have seen the Warriors do some incredible things, and I don't think they're going to win this series. I still do not think they're going to win the series. But if they do win it, it's going to go down in the annals of NBA history as one of the greatest moments of all time, no doubt about it. But you're right. I'm thinking, you know, quietly we just accept the fact that, like, Klay Thompson made 2 3-pointers and Curry won in the last 98 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, those are 30-footers.
Give those guys a little credit, will you, please? Thank you. Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, Matt,
no, I'm with you there.
Thanks so much, Matt. We got to roll. We got a Padre pregame, unfortunately, to get to. Love to talk much more. Look forward to the last, hopefully, 2 more games of this series because it's been fun to watch. And thanks for all the interesting stuff. Appreciate your time.
Oh, go Pods.
Attaboy, Matt. Good way to end it. Matt Steinmetz, Radio.com's NBA Insider on the SDCCU hotline. Vote SDCCU Best Credit Union in the Union Tribune Readers Poll daily at SDCCU.com/vote. San Diego County Credit Union, it's not big bank banking. It's better.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Gwen and Chris wanted to rank things, and that means whatever they want.
Come on, don't get weird.
They bring you their top five of the day because it's time to start the countdown.
All right, I'll be honest with you. Today's countdown is not going to make you feel great. At least my five isn't going to make you feel great. The category is top five heartbreaking sports injuries. And the word heartbreaking is what came to my mind when I put my particular list together. There's a couple of the injuries on here that I'm telling you in advance, I do not recommend you go to YouTube and try to see them again.
All right, I'm going to get YouTube up right now.
Don't do it. I'm telling you in advance. That's how heartbreaking my list is. So we did a similar list a couple of months ago, but it was more like funny injuries. This is real heartbreaking injuries.
Yeah.
Kind of like how you felt when you saw KD go down last night. All right, we ready? I can't start before I hear number five.
Number five.
There it is.
Because usually I do start before I hear number five. All right, my number five. This is a very famous one, although it's before all your times. Tony Conigliaro was a superstar rookie phenom outfielder for the Boston Red Sox. Hit 32 home runs at the age of 20, was easily the runaway rookie of the year, was on his way to the Hall of Fame. One of those kind of guys, you know, who just take baseball by storm. On the cover of Sports Illustrated, the Red Sox, it was 1967. They were having a magical season. And just before the end of the season, he got beamed just below the left eye. And Sports Illustrated put him on the cover after that happened. And I can still see his black eye. It's grotesque. So if you want to go look at it, Scraby, be warned. Anyway, Tony Conigliaro never really played again. It was heartbreaking. He did come back in 1969, 2 years later after the beaning, but his vision was never the same. He was out of baseball in the mid-70s, and even more heartbreaking, died of a heart attack in 1990 at the age of 45. Tony Conigliaro, when I was a kid, that injury scared me so much that I could never hardly ever comfortably stand in a batter's box just because of what I saw happen to him. So that's my number five.
My number five has a very similar story. Twins great Kirby Puckett played 11 years in the majors. In 1995, suffered a broken jaw on a fastball, and he never made it back to the majors. He tried to rehab in the minors, but in 1996, he was diagnosed with glaucoma after he woke up without vision in his right eye. Three surgeries couldn't resolve his vision, and Kirby Puckett was forced to call it quits. He also would later pass away. I think it was due to a heart attack.
Yes, it was. Kirby Puckett was a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And how better of a Hall of Famer would he have been had this not happened? One of the great players and one of the most fun players ever to watch play the game. He played with such joy. And it was number taken four. Away from him. No worries, Thomas. All right,
Thomas, moving along, guys.
No, we're good. We're good. He's good. Number four, everybody knows this one, but I thought it belonged on the list because it ended his career, and that's Joe Theismann. The compound fracture that he suffered 1985, Monday Night Football, hit by Lawrence Taylor and Henry Carson of the Giants. Legs snapped right in the middle. And Theismann never played again. And it's an injury that's so horrific that I know Tony can't look at it.
Nope.
And I'm going to recommend you don't go look at it on YouTube to say, hey, I want to see that. Because it's really, really rough. That's my four.
Another similarity, right? I mean, go from baseball to go football. And my football guy is a former Cowboy wide receiver, Michael Irvin.
Okay.
One of the most well-known players in the game during his 11-year career in the NFL. Ended up getting a spinal injury on a tackle in Philadelphia. And the unfortunate part, not only did he get hurt, but the Philadelphia fans cheered him as he was on a stretcher and carted off the field.
Yep.
One of the most absurd moments in fan history, I think.
Cheering it's one of the man. Things that has...
And that's always, what it brought me to last night a little
it's
bit.
It's one of those things that's put Philadelphia at the top of the list when it comes to mean fans. That and booing Santa Claus.
Yeah. Yeah. There it is.
Yeah.
Enough said.
Number three.
Okay, my number three has to do with a local guy. This was a heartbreaking injury. Dave Dravecki, pitcher for the Padres. Really good pitcher for the Padres. Good left-hander, right in the 1980s there. I think he had a little piece of that 1984 World Series team, if I'm not mistaken.
He
or
did.
Right after
he
it.
He did.
Yeah. Got diagnosed with a cancerous tumor in his left arm in 1988. He fought that, recovered from that. Everybody said he was cancer-free. It was a great comeback story, but he came back maybe a little too soon. And in 1989, he was delivering a pitch in Montreal. And I'm telling you, don't watch this. I guarantee it's on YouTube somewhere. He broke his arm on the pitch. And you could hear it. You could see it. And it was heartbreaking. And it was the end of the career of Dave Dravecki. Ended up having his left arm amputated as a result of that injury. I'm saying, I told you, my list is heartbreaking.
What?
Yeah. And you know what? Fortunately for everybody, that game in particular, Montreal, it wasn't televised. So they only had this view that was at the very top of the stadium. So all you could see was him throw it. It wasn't like your normal pitching view that you get to see on TV. It was from above. You could still see everything that happened, but I just think it would have been a lot more gruesome had the game been on TV and it had the regular center field view.
Oh my goodness.
Don't look at it.
He can't.
Scraby, I'm telling you.
No, just the one thing I always look for, sorry Tony, the one thing I always look for is the players and they just immediately rush to him.
Yeah.
Oh, the people that were there, they heard it break. Oh. I mean, that's the thing. I know your dad talked about this a couple of times. He was at the game, obviously, in right field, and I think he could hear it snap all the way out there.
Was it with the Padres? I thought it was with the Giants.
Oh, you're right. I beg your pardon.
The one that happened at Qualcomm was Tom Browning. I was in the stands for that.
Okay.
Heard the explosion in his arm and him screaming bloody murder. It was those ones are tough, man. Those baseball ones in particular, because you don't see him coming, right? In this case, it's like he's throwing the ball regular, and all of a sudden – It snaps. Now, let me get to my number three. This one goes back to the game of basketball. It's in the playoffs. This involves Chris Ello's team, Derrick Rose. I think it was the first round of the playoffs, wasn't it?
I know it was the first round of the playoffs.
And
on a year they were supposed to win the championship.
The year that they were supposed to win the championship.
Or at least get to the finals.
Derrick Rose, as normal, gets to the bucket, explodes up, and you could just see his knee give out.
Yep. And they had the game in hand. They still upset at Thibodeau for having him in the game up by 13, 15 points with about 2 minutes to go.
Should have had him. Some people felt like he should have been out of the game.
Could have been on the bench.
But listen, Derrick Rose's career, although he's recovered as of late.
Yeah, but anybody who's seen him in the last 5 years
never
didn't get to see the real guy.
Never quite got back to that level of play again.
Nope.
After that injury. It was a sad time because it ended his Bulls career.
It changed the fortunes of that franchise without question, but you're right. Derrick Rose won the MVP the year prior to that and deserved it. That's how incredible he used to be at getting to the basket and twisting his body and the strength that he used to have to finish plays at the rim.
Just so explosive.
And it was too bad. That injury was really bad. He never recovered from it.
Number two.
Okay. Sorry, I'm getting sadder. Daryl Stingley was a wide receiver for the New England Patriots in the mid-70s and got hit in a preseason game going over the middle. And the hit, I believe, was from Jack Tatum. And there was nothing wrong with the hit. It wasn't illegal. It was football. But this is one where your worst nightmare came true. Daryl Stingley suffered a broken fourth and fifth vertebra. He was a quadriplegic the rest of his life. I will never forget, maybe 2 years after that, they honored him at a Monday Night Football game, and the people in New England stood for maybe 10 minutes and applauded while tears poured down his face, and he was unable to wipe them away, of course. It was about as heartbreaking an injury as I've ever been around in sports. So,
number two for me is last night. That was tough to see especially once we got some sound. Once I was able to get some sound with it, and I rewatched the game last night, and it was just tough, man. You see KD out there, and it's almost as though he knew that too much would result in this, because the entire first quarter he is on the perimeter, not involved unless he's getting the ball on an open jump shot. He gets the ball starting the second quarter. He gets one touch on the with his back to the basket. He's not comfortable, gives it back out. The only reason why he ended up with his back to the basket in this particular, on the second time he does, is because he tried to take, I think it was Kawhi, off the dribble. And Kawhi stood him up. He kind of had to put his back to him. And it was oh my gosh, it was almost like watching Kobe do it all over again.
Right.
Same exact movement.
I will tell you that sitting next to Tony last night, it was moving. I mean, it was hard to almost keep our show going.
Yeah.
Watching that happen live, because felt so bad.
There's just a look on a player's face when he knows this isn't good, and he's once he's waved the folks over because he needed help getting off the court, it's just like, this is different than last time. Last time he didn't go to the ground. He stayed up, walked his way to the bench, he needed help. And I thought it was so classy to see Steph Curry.
Who's
in the game, mind you. Steph Curry and Andre Iguodala are the ones that taking back.
Steph Curry was in the game, made them hold up the game while he walked back all the way to the locker room with him. Don't think that didn't mean something as that game went forward.
He was asked why, and his explanation was, I don't know why. The spirit told me it just felt right at the time.
And I
applaud him for that. I applaud him for a lot that he does, honestly. He's a good man, it seems like. So, kudos to him, but this KD injury has got me all feeling kind of weird today.
Number one.
I honestly can't believe I have a more heartbreaking injury than any of the ones I've mentioned already. But the most gruesome injury in the history of sports, and I am honestly, Scraby, demanding you don't look at video of this. It will stick with you for years. I'm telling you.
I know. You gave me the dad finger.
The injury happened to a Buffalo Sabres goaltender named Clint Malarchuk. And he made a save, and there was a pileup of bodies in front of the net.
Tony's taking his headphones off.
Somebody got knocked over. Their skate came up, cut his carotid artery.
I've actually seen this.
The only good part of this, the only good, the best part, the part, he survived it. The trainers came out, stopped the bleeding somehow, got him to the hospital. They got him back. You know, somehow they got it under control. Clint Malarchuk never really played again at the NHL level, but did finish up his career here with 3 or 4 years as the San Diego Gulls goaltender. And I got to know him, and he was a great guy, but he always had that scar. And I'm telling you, folks, do not watch the video of that, because it's heartbreaking. And thank God he lived through it. That's the only thing I can say.
Number one for me is a homer pick. It's Kobe Bryant, 2013. Ironically, it happened against the Warriors, as those guys were all young pups. And this was really the end of Kobe Bryant's career. I mean, he came back and played, but he was never the same.
Right.
It was partly because he was on one of those runs again. Because this is the year they had Dwight Howard, Steve Nash. Steve Nash has a crazy leg injury. He breaks his leg. He's out for the year. Dwight is recovering off of back surgery. And he is like running off wins against really good teams, basically by himself. And I just remember we were in Fresno. I was in AAA with the Dodgers. And I just remember getting back to the hotel room, watching the game, and then it wasn't on TV up there, but I got a update. Kobe walks off the floor. They're concerned it's Achilles. And I just remember my heart sinking. I don't think I slept that night. This was like one of my idols.
Yeah.
And it was pretty much the end of his career, but that was number one for me.
The countdown is now closed.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.